Blog Talk Radio.
Come, I be fortress is our God, a bulwark never fading. Our helper, he amid the flood of mortal ills prevailing. For still our ancient foe does seek to work us woe. His wrath and power are great.
Good morning, Saints, and welcome to another broadcast of Reformation News, where I, your brother and faithful servant in the Lord Christ Jesus, am in studio to present to you, dear Saints of God, Proposition number 67. Proposition number 67. We've been spending quite some time presenting these propositions, these fiery bullet points, these theses, because we are in the business of exposing the Joint College of African American Bishops. I want to show you that they're thoroughly Roman Catholic, that they have been thoroughly, these bishops in the Joint College of African American Bishops have been thoroughly paganized. These are pagan ministers who are double agents of Rome, who serve the Antichrist, and they won't call this broadcast because I'll bring all of that out. The number here, as always, as is our custom, at the beginning of every broadcast and throughout, we give out this number in hopes that Mr. J. Delano Ellis, the Metropolitanus Archiepiscopus of the Joint College of African American Bishops, will call in to defend his position. The number here is 646-564-9730, and we are at proposition number 67 today. We're making our way towards the 95 thesis. We have decided to present our very own version of the 95 thesis. So here we are. We try to come on each and every day, and we try to give you a new bullet point. And then we wait for the Joint College of African American Bishops to present their counter-argument. And, of course, we're no dopes here. We're pretty well-versed in Roman Catholic canon law, Roman Catholic history, church history. And we would like to talk to these so-called bishops of Christ. We like to talk to them about why do they wear pagan outfits? Why do they invoke pagan canon law? Why are they making pilgrimages to Rome to meet with the Pope, whatever Pope that may be? Why are these men so enamored with upholding Roman Catholic tradition and wearing Roman Catholic vestments and insignia? Why? Why in the world? Why in the world would you abandon the Lord Jesus Christ as head of the church and join Rome, who has as the head of the church the Roman pontiff? Why in the world? Why in the world would you abandon the colors? The traditional color of Pentecostalism is white. That's the traditional color of Pentecostalism. White. Why is that? Well, because in Revelation 19, we are told that the bride of Christ, the bride, the true church, has been given to wear white garment made of fine linen. That's what the bride of Christ wears. That's what every bride wears at a wedding. I recently attended a wedding several weeks ago, and when they started to play the song for the bride to come in, and everybody stood up, and we were all looking at the groom. We were all facing to the front. There was the groom, there was the minister, there was the best man. They were all in the front. But as soon as the music started for the bride to come in, we all were encouraged to stand up. We were all encouraged to look to the back where she was coming in, and she was dressed completely in white. I've never seen a bride dressed in purple and in scarlet. Those are the colors of the harlot church. Those are the colors of the whore of Babylon. And those are the colors worn by J. Delano Ellis and his Roman stooges. So, my brothers and sisters, we're talking about insignia. We're talking about insignia. Now, where do we get this concept of insignia from? Well, J. Delano Ellis, the Metropolitanus Archiepiscopus of the Joint College of African American Bishops, wrote a book entitled The Bishopric, a handbook on creating episcopacy in the African American Pentecostal Church. In chapter 1, which was entitled In the Beginning, The Need, on page 17, he writes, "One late afternoon in the summer of 1994, four men were traveling from New York to Philadelphia for the purpose of purchasing vestments and insignia for the Episcopal office." That's how the book begins. The book begins by telling us the history of how this organization came into existence. This organization, which next year, 2018, will be celebrating its 25th anniversary. Again, Mr. Ellis writes, "One late afternoon in the summer of 1994, four men were traveling from New York to Philadelphia for the purpose of purchasing vestments and insignia for the Episcopal office." Now, you know what vestments are. Those are those faggoty-looking clothes that the members of the Joint College of African American Bishops, as well as the clergy of Rome, wear. It's the effeminate wear, that these men have chosen to put on. But many do not know what an insignia is. What's insignia? We know what vestments are, but we don't know what insignia is. Well, you can't go to a Bible dictionary to find out what insignia is. You can't go to a Bible encyclopedia to find out what insignia is. You can't go to a Greek or Hebrew lexicon to find out what an insignia is. Really, you have to go to Roman Catholic works to find out what the term insignia means. Well, in the Dictionary of the Liturgy, which was compiled by the Reverend Jovian P. Lang, this is a Catholic dictionary, mind you, on page number 268, the definition of insignia. "Insignia are the vestments and emblems worn by prelates when they officiate at the liturgical ceremony. What's a prelate? A prelate is a highfalutin bishop. That's what a prelate is. A highfalutin bishop. Well, insignia, pontifical insignia, to be more specific, the vestments and emblems worn by prelates when they officiate at the liturgical ceremony. Pope Paul VI simplified their number and use and reduced privileges concerning them. Examples from the insignia of bishops and popes are the mitre, the funny hat. The mitre is part of the is one of the insignia. Gloves, faggoty gloves, is another insignia. The episcopal ring, the pectoral cross, the crozier, which is the pastoral staff, and the pallium. The pallium. This is the one working about the pallium. The pallium. So, learning, having a Catholic dictionary defined what is an insignia or what are the insignias. Well, basically, insignias are accessories. They're accessories that bishops wear along with vestments, that bishops and archbishops and cardinals and the pope. This is not something, this stuff of insignia, this is not Protestant. This is Catholic. This is not something that's biblical, but something that's pagan. So, we've been talking about the pallium. So now in proposition number 67, rather, proposition number 67, and let me give out the number one more time to Mr. J. Delano Ellis, who wrote the book, The Bishopric, A Handbook on Creating Episcopacy for the African-American Pentecostal Church. Mr. Ellis, the number here is 646-564-9730. We would like to talk to you, Mr. Metropolitanus Archiepiscopus. We would like to talk to you about vestments and insignia and why you wrote in your book that you and some others were on their way from New York to Philadelphia with the specific goal of purchasing vestments, Roman Catholic faggot wear, and insignia, Roman Catholic faggot accessories. Mr. Ellis, we would like to know why would a man of God, why would a man of God put on pagan garments, devilish garments, doctrines of demons garments? Mr. Ellis, we would like to talk to you about this. Well, Mr. Ellis is not going to call, nor is any member of the Joint College of African American Bishops is going to call. They're not going to call. They're not going to call. They're just not going to do it. But here is proposition number 67. Purchasing of an insignia such as the pallium makes those who wear it invading wolves masquerading in sheep's clothing who will not spare the flock. Again, let me repeat this. The purchasing of insignia such as the pallium makes those who wear it invading wolves, masquerading in sheep's clothing, who will not spare the flock. Who will not spare the flock. Let me read the text to you. Let me read the text. The text comes to us from the book of the Acts of the Apostles, not the Acts of the Bishops, but the Acts of the Apostles. In verse 28 of chapter 20, Paul says, Acts 20:28, he's speaking to bishops now, he's speaking to the elders, to the presbyters of the Church of Ephesus, and he says to them, take heed therefore unto yourselves and unto all the flock, over which the Holy Ghost has made you overseers, to feed the church of God, which he hath purchased with his own blood. For I know this, after my departing shall grievous wolves enter in among you, not sparing the flock. For I know this, Paul said, that after my departing shall grievous wolves enter in among you, not sparing the flock. Thus, it is my contention that those who purchase insignia such as the pallium makes those who purchase it and wear it invading wolves, the same kind of invading wolves that poor Paul warned of when he said, after my departing, after I leave, after I'm gone, after my departing, shall grievous wolves enter in among you. They'll invade the flock, and they won't spare the flock. These are wolves in sheep's clothing. These are the kinds of wolves that Jesus warned us of. Both Jesus in the Sermon on the Mount, in Matthew chapter 7, verse 15, and here Paul in Acts 20, verse 28 and 29, they both warn us, does the Savior and his apostle, of wolves who will invade the flock. Masquerading wolves, false prophets, if you will, false teachers, if you will. And it is after their departing that these wolves will try to gain entrance into the flock. Now, in reference to Matthew chapter 7, verse 15, I have Aesop's fable, the wolf in sheep's clothing. The wolf, this is one of Aesop's famous fables, famous. And again, it is entitled The Wolf in Sheep's Clothing. The Wolf. Let's listen to Aesop's fable.
This is the fable of the wolf in sheep's clothing. Once there was a wolf watching a flock of sheep grazing in the meadow below. He was most unhappy because he knew that he could not get to them. The sheep were guarded by an alert shepherd and his faithful dog. With these two on guard, the sheep grazed very contentedly, for they knew that they were safe. But the wolf, who liked nothing better than lamb or mutton, was determined that he would have a feast.
Well, you see, there's a faithful shepherd and a faithful shepherd dog on guard. The wolf has designs. The wolf has made up its mind that he would like to have lamb and mutton for dinner. But he can't get it. He cannot gain access because, as Paul said to the Ephesian elders in verse 28, he says, "Take heed therefore unto yourselves and to all the flock over which the Holy Ghost has made you overseers, to feed the flock, to feed the church of God." Well, that word just doesn't mean to feed, but it also means to feed and protect. So here's the shepherd and the shepherd dog. They're leading. Here's the shepherd and the shepherd dog in Aesop's fable, and they're watching the flock. They're protecting the flock. They're feeding the flock, and they've got their eyes peeled for any kind of predator. Well, here comes a wolf. Here comes a wolf with designs. He's got designs to enter the flock so that he may gain some mutton. But the shepherd and the shepherd dog are on guard. So obviously the wolf has to come up with some plan. Some plan that will allow him to gain access to the flock.
This is the fable of the wolf in sheep's clothing. Once there was a wolf watching a flock of sheep grazing in the meadow below. He was most unhappy because he knew that he could not get to them. The sheep were guarded by an alert shepherd and his faithful dog.
See, the shepherd was alert and the shepherd dog was faithful. The wolf could not gain access. He just could not gain access. Why? Because the shepherd was alert and the shepherd dog was faithful.
With these two on guard, the sheep grazed very contentedly, for they knew that they were safe.
With these two on guard, with the shepherd on guard and the sheepdog on guard, the sheep grazed and didn't have a worry. Why? Because they knew that as long as these two were at their post, they were safe.
But the wolf, who liked nothing better than lamb or mutton, was determined that he would have a feast. The wolf had no luck at all, for the shepherd and the dog were always on guard. They could recognize the wolf the instant that he came near the sheep. As the wolf grew hungrier, he also grew more desperate.
There must be a way to get those sheep. I know I am as clever as that dog, and I know I am much smarter than that shepherd. After all, he's just a human.
But it was always the same. The wolf would try to get the sheep, and instead would be chased and pelted with stones.
Just look at me. I'm nothing but skin and bones. I must have some food or I will surely die. I must think of a plan that will outsmart the shepherd and his dog.
Now, quite by accident, the hungry wolf discovered a sheepskin, all that was left of an unfortunate sheep that had been killed and eaten by a band of robbers.
What's this? A sheepskin? I think this may be the solution to my problem. Yes! I think this will do nicely. No one would know me now, not even the shepherd or his dog.
And quickly the wolf set out for the meadow and his feast of lamb and mutton. The wolf was congratulating himself on his cleverness as he boldly moved among the sheep, trying to decide which one would begin his meal.
There is my shepherd. Just a few more steps and I'll have him. Oh, I can hardly wait. Oh, I'm so hungry.
But the clever wolf was just a little too clever for himself. In his greed, the wolf did not see a low branch, which caught the sheepskin and pulled it off.
Just a few more steps and I'll have a tasty little supper.
But the wolf in sheep's clothing was still a wolf. Without his disguise, he was easily recognized. The shepherd and his dog drove the wolf from the meadow. Forgetting his hunger, the frightened wolf ran and ran until he was far away.
Now I know that the shepherd and his dog are more clever than I. They were not fooled by the fact that looks are often deceiving.
The shepherd and the sheepdog were not deceived by looks. Did you get that? Let me play that for you again. The shepherd and the sheepdog were not deceived by looks.
By the fact that looks are often deceiving. Now I know that the shepherd and his dog are more clever than I. They were not fooled by the fact that looks are often deceiving.
Forgetting his hunger, the frightened wolf ran and ran until he was far away.
Now I know that the shepherd and his dog are more clever than I. They were not fooled by the fact that looks are often deceiving.
Looks, vestments, people who put on accessories, those kind of looks are often deceiving. They are designed to deceive you, to con you, to get over on you, to get close to you, to gain your confidence, so that then they can fleece you and destroy the flock. That's the whole moral of the story. That's the whole moral. So now, my brothers and sisters, what is a pallium? What's a pallium? What is a pallium? What is that? Well, again, we turn to the dictionary of the liturgy, Roman Catholic Dictionary of the Liturgy. On page 476, it says, a pallium is a band of white wool, woven from the wool, white wool of two lambs annually offered, notice, they have to kill these lambs. A band of white wool, a band of white cloth, woven from the white wool of two lambs annually offered to the Holy Father, the Pope, on the Feast of St. Agnes. On the Feast of St. Agnes. Worn over the chasuble in the form of a collar by the Pope, patriarchs, and archbishops. That's a pallium. It's a band. It's a 2.5 inch wide band made from the wool of two slaughtered. Now think about it. When Paul speaks to the Ephesian elders, he says to protect the flock, to feed the flock, to watch over, pretty much like the shepherd dog and the shepherd were doing for the sheep in the story. The wolf in sheep's clothing. I mean, we find that the wolf could not gain access to the sheep because the shepherd was what? Well, the shepherd was always looking, always alert, always on the job. And the sheepdog was faithful. And because of these two, guarding the flock, protecting the flock, watching over the flock, the wolf had no access, could not gain access, could not grab a little lamb, could not turn it into mutton. So what are shepherds supposed to do, my dear brothers and sisters? What are shepherds supposed to do? They're supposed to protect the flock. Shepherds do not kill the sheep. They protect the sheep. They pasture the sheep. Well, we just read that the Pope makes these palliums out of two sacrificed lambs. Not out of two lambs that are sheared and then put back with the fold, not two lambs that are given a haircut. Because that's what shearing is. You're taking the wool off the sheep, off the lambs. Well, it's not two lambs that were given a haircut and then returned to their mothers. No, these are two animals that were gathered from the flock, fleeced or sheared, and then they were sacrificed. Their throats were cut. That's where the Pope gets the pallium. Not by protecting sheep, but by killing sheep. By killing. You see, by their actions, by their deeds, by their works, Jesus said, you will know them. Jesus said in Matthew 17, how will you tell who are the wolves in sheep's clothing? By their deeds you will know them. Well, what do shepherds do? Shepherds protect the flock. Shepherds do not kill their sheep. That's what wolves do. In verse 29 of Acts 20, excuse me, in verse 28 of Acts 20, Paul says to the elders, take heed therefore unto yourselves and unto all the flock over which the Holy Ghost has made you overseers, to feed / protect the church of God, which he hath purchased with his own blood. For I know this, after my departing shall grievous wolves enter in, not sparing the flock. So notice, pastors protect the flock, wolves devour the flock. Pastors are alert and ever dutiful, and wolves are predacious and ever destroying. So the very fact that the Pope, the head of the Roman Catholic Church, will annually take two lambs and have them sheared and then have them slaughtered is enough proof that the Pope is not the protector of the sheep, but the killer of the sheep. That's what he is. Now let me give you some audio on this. Let me just show you how true this is. Here's a YouTube video, very instructive, and it's called "What Is a Paleum?" Now I'm playing this because I want you to see that I'm not a biased person. I'm not making stuff up. Because some of you do not have these Catholic dictionaries. Some of you don't have these Catholic insights. So I don't want you to think that I'm making stuff up because you don't have access. So I got some stuff from YouTube made up by Roman Catholics. This is Roman Catholic teaching. So here is a YouTube video entitled, "What is a Paleum?" What is a Paleum? Is a Paleum. Listen to this.
What is a Paleum? The Paleum is a white woolen strip worn around the neck with six black crosses, which symbolizes the bond between an archbishop and his pope.
Now, did you get that? Let me read it to you. The Paleum is a white woolen strip worn around the neck with six black crosses, which symbolizes, does this insignia, it symbolizes the bond between an archbishop and his pope. It's not a bond between the archbishop and Christ. It symbolizes the bond between an archbishop, a bootlicker, and the pope, the boot owner. Here's more.
Between an archbishop and his pope. The wearing of the pallium dates back to the 4th century, predating the mitre.
Now, you see, the wearing of the pallium dates back to the 4th century, predating the what? The other insignia, the mitre. Now, notice, the wearing of the pallium dates back to the 4th century. What does that tell you? Well, Christ, the Good Shepherd, never wore a pallium. Christ's apostles never wore palliums. The successor of the apostles, the apostolic fathers, never wore palliums. Why? Well, because to have a pallium, you have to kill lambs. It's not just shearing them, but you have to kill them. And you don't have to kill lambs, because as pastors, we don't kill lambs, we protect them. So when Constantine took over the church, the Roman Emperor Constantine, who was also Pontifex Maximus, pagan high priest, when he became the Bishop of Bishops, did Constantine, he introduced the pallium. The pallium has, it's a woolen cloth made from the wool of two offered lambs. And it goes back to the 4th century. Every book, everything you consult will tell you it started in the 4th century. In other words, Jesus never had this. Jesus never sanctioned this. Jesus never gave this, nor did his apostles.
On the feast day of Virgin and Martyr Saint Agnes, on 21st January, two lambs are presented to the Benedictine nuns of St. Cecilia. They arrive wearing crowns, lying in baskets decorated with red and white flowers and red and white ribbons, red for martyrdom, white for purity.
Now, you notice, this custom is attached to a so-called saint called St. Agnes. St. Agnes. And one of the lambs arrives dressed in red, draped in with red flowers and draped with red ribbons. The one in red typifies martyrdom. In other words, you're going to die. A little lamb, you're going to die. You're dressed in red. You're going to die. The other lamb, the second lamb, has white flowers and has white ribbons, which speaks of purity. In other words, speaks of the innocent. These little lambs are innocent. They're innocent. Why are you killing them? They're little innocent creatures. But you see, Rome has to shed blood. Rome loves to shed blood. Rome, Rome, Rome. The very Rome that wants us to believe that there are shepherds, they are into the shedding of blood. They love killing things, does Rome. They love killing holy people, righteous people, because the little one little lamb is dressed in white flowers and white ribbons. They only want pure things, does Rome. And the other lamb, dressed in red ribbon with red flowers, testifies to the fact that these two creatures are going to be martyred. They're going to be sacrificed. Their throats are going to be cut, and blood is going to be let out. Well, what does it remind you of? Well, it reminds you of Cain and Abel. In the first epistle of John, chapter 3, verses 10 through 12, John says, and why did Cain kill his brother? Why? Because Cain was of the evil one. And the word they use is, why did Cain slew his brother? Why? And the word slew there in the Greek is, why did Cain cut his throat? This is why God says, your brother's blood crieth to me from the ground. You cut your brother's throat. Your brother was innocent. Your brother was innocent. Why did you kill your brother? You're the sinner, Cain. You're the one who wouldn't do things my way. You're the apostate. You're the rebel. Why did you kill your brother who was innocent? Your brother was not at fault, because that's what the devil does. The devil is a murderer from the beginning. He himself kills. Everyone who is in league with the devil goes out to kill. That's why John says, and Cain was of the wicked one, ospineros in the Greek. Ospineros, when the term ospineros or wicked one means the one who drags you down. Where does Satan drag people down? Well, he drags them into the gutter, and then he drags them 6 feet under. And he drags their body 6 feet under, but then he drags their soul down into hell. He's the ospineros. He's the wicked one. He's the dragger down. That's why when people die, they put them 6 feet under. That's what happens when you die. Well, it has to do with the feast of St. Agnes. St. Agnes. Saint, it has nothing to do with Jesus. None of this has to do anything with Jesus. But it has to do with the Feast of St. Agnes. Here it is again.
On the feast day of Virgin and Martyr St. Agnes, on 21st January, two lambs are presented to the Benedictine nuns of St. Cecilia. They arrive wearing crowns, lying in baskets decorated with red and white flowers and red and white ribbons, red for martyrdom, white for purity. The lambs are blessed and incensed before being taken to the Vatican for the Pope's blessing. They are then kept until Holy Thursday, when they are shorn before being sacrificed on Good Friday.
So they get their haircuts on Holy Thursday, and then they're sacrificed or they're slaughtered on Good Friday. Think about that. A day before their throats are cut, they get their hair cut. They get their hair cut on Holy Thursday. They're sewn, S-H-O-R-N. They're sewn on Thursday. And then on Good Friday, they're killed. That's what happens. I didn't make this up. I mean, I know you think I'm making it up. I know you think that I'm making stuff up because I have a bone to pick, but with the Roman Catholic Church and with the Joint College of African American Bishops, but my brothers and sisters, I'm just speaking the gospel. I'm just preaching truth. The Joint College of African American Bishops started out with four men going from New York to Philadelphia to buy vestments and insignia. Well, what's one of the insignia? The pallium. The pallium. They're joining Satan's band. And in order to wear Satan's band, you get to wear one of Satan's band. It's a two-inch, it's a 2.5-inch band of white wool with six black crosses on it, which goes back to the Feast of St. Agnes, where two little lambs are slaughtered. Slaughtered on the Pope's orders. It's the Pope who orders their killing. It's not enough that he got their wool. It's not enough to give them a haircut and then, you know, the merciful Pope, the merciful Pope. The Holy Father, you would think the Holy Father would be merciful and say, you know what, we got their wool, put those two little lambs back with their mother. No. They cut their throats. I remember, if I'm not mistaken, every year when they came to President Obama and said, Mr. President, we have this turkey here for Thanksgiving. You need to give the order for us to chop his neck off. And President Obama said, no, you know what? Don't kill the turkey. Send him to some farm. And so the turkey got a pardon. The turkey got a stay of execution. That's from President Obama. President Obama, I mean, he said, no, let the turkey live. Find a nice farm for the turkey. I know it's tradition. I know that prior to my coming into office, the other presidents would have you chop the turkey's head off. But, I don't want that. Go send the turkey to some farm. Go let the turkey, I'm going to give the turkey a presidential pardon. I'm feeling good this year. And he did it every year. I'm going to give the turkey a presidential pardon, and the turkey can go live out the rest of its life on some farm. That's the president of the United States. Now, you would think that the Holy Father, the Pope, would spare these little lambs. He would spare them. But no, the Pope's got to have blood. The Pope's got to have blood. You see why? Because he's a wolf. It's not enough to get the wool. He also wants their soul. See, the devil doesn't want you to be his slave here on earth. The devil also wants your soul. The devil also wants to destroy your life. The devil has a taste for blood. You read Revelation 17:6, and the harlot church was drunken on the blood of the saints. And here you have these African American jackass bishops wanting to get a pallium, wanting to mimic Rome. Don't they realize that this is the religion of Antichrist? Well, here's more.
The wool from these lambs is woven into palliums for newly elected archbishops. After the palliums are woven, they are kept until the Feast of Saints Peter and Paul, when they are presented to the newly appointed archbishops. However, in 2015, Pope Francis decided that each newly appointed metropolitan archbishops should be formally vested at a ceremony held in their own archdiocese. The elect becomes shepherd of Christ's flock. The lamb's wool is meant to represent the lost, sick, or weak sheep which the shepherd places on his shoulders and carries to the waters of life.
So this is what the pallium is supposed to represent. The lamb's wool is meant to represent the lost, sick, or weak sheep which the shepherd places on his shoulders and carries to the water of life. Well, why didn't the Pope let those little lambs be taken to the water of life? If the wool represents the lost and sick and weak sheep, if that's what it represents, lost, sick, weak sheep, why is it that they have the wool of dead sheep on their shoulders? Because it's a lie. It's a lie. You see, the pallium, the piece of wool, the woolen band that measures 2.5 inches with six black crosses on it is supposed to represent the lost, the sick, the weak sheep in the flock. But that's not what it really represents. Why? Because the lambs made, or the palliums made from the wool, is made of two dead lambs, two martyred lambs, two butchered lambs, on the orders of the Pope. On the orders of the Pope. And supposedly these bishops are supposed to carry these little weak sheep and lost sheep on their shoulders to the waters of life. Well, I don't care. You can take any dead animal to a stream. That dead animal's not going to drink. It's dead. A dead animal will not do. So what good? I mean, it represents the lost sheep, the sick sheep, the weak sheep that these bishops carry on their shoulders to the water of life. Problem is, the sheep are dead. I've never seen anything that's dead drink water. I've never seen a dead cow drink water. I've never seen a dead pig drink water. I've never seen anything dead. I've never seen a dead person in a casket. See, Reverend, while I'm doing their eulogy, I've never had a dead person sit up in their casket and say, Reverend, I'm thirsty. Can I have a glass of water? No, the person's dead. The person's dead. So now, who is St. Agnes? Let's go to St. Agnes. Let's find out who St. Agnes is.
St. Agnes of Rome was a virgin martyr born in 291 AD and raised in a wealthy Christian family. She is the patron saint of young girls, chastity, rape survivors, and the children of Mary. She is often represented with a lamb, the symbol of her virginal innocence, and a palm branch.
Now, what is she the patron saint of? Little girls, little virgins, and the children of Mary, right? Okay? Let's listen to that again. In other words, she's supposedly the patron saint of little children. Let's listen.
Saint Agnes of Rome was a virgin martyr born in 291 AD and raised in a wealthy Christian family. She is the patron saint of young girls, chastity, rape survivors, and the children of Mary.
Rape survivors. She's the patron saint of rape survivors. The children of Mary, Mary's little children, the little lambs. Like Jesus said to Peter, feed my little lambs. And then he said, Peter, feed my sheep. Little lambs, little innocent ones. That's what she's the patron saint of, little lambs. She's the patron saint of rape victims. Are you getting this? Here it is again.
And raised in a wealthy Christian family. She is the patron saint of young girls, chastity, rape survivors, and the children of Mary. She is often represented with a lamb, the symbol of her virginal innocence, and a palm branch. Her feast day is celebrated on January 21st. Agnes was a very beautiful young girl, and her hand in marriage was highly sought. However, Agnes made a promise to God never to stain her purity. Her love for the Lord was great, and she hated sin more than death. Whenever a man wished to marry Agnes, she would always say, Jesus Christ is my only spouse. According to legend, the young men she turned away became so angry and insulted by her purity and devotion to God that they began to submit her name to authorities as a Christian follower. Accounts of Agnes's life hold the prefect Sempronius responsible for her martyrdom. It is said he condemned the young girl to be dragged through the street naked. The legend states that Agnes's hair grew instantly to cover her entire body, and all the men who attempted to rape the beautiful virgin were immediately struck blind. Once sentenced to death for refusing to deny God, Agnes was tied to a stake to burn. However, either the wood would not burn, or the flames parted away from her. This prompted an officer to draw his sword and behead the girl. It is believed that her blood, which poured out into the stadium, was soaked up with cloths by Christians. She died at the age of 12 or 13 on January 21st, 304.
Okay, so that's the story. So what happened to little Agnes? Well, little Agnes was a little lamb. She was a little lamb. And so she wouldn't give in to the carnal desires of men, so men accused her. This is according to legend. Now, what did they do to Agnes? Well, they took off her clothes. What does clothes represent? Shearing. Shearing. They took off her clothes. Then miraculously, a miracle, Agnes became Rapunzel. Her hair grew. Her hair grew so quickly and so fast and so miraculously that her hair covered her nakedness. And then eventually she was slaughtered. She was slaughtered. So what does it talk about? The lamb that is sheared. Her clothes were taken off. She was naked, but her hair grew back. And then eventually she was martyred. They tried to kill her numerous times, but God intervened. Until finally, the soldier chopped her head off. But they tried numerous times to kill her by dragging her through the street. But they tried many things. But according to legend, made up stories, fairy tales, things that are not historically verifiable. See, this is all made up stuff. This is not Bible. None of this is Bible. It's all a fairy tale. But here it is again.
Saint Agnes of Rome was a virgin martyr born in 291 AD and raised in a wealthy Christian family. She is the patron saint of young girls, chastity, rape survivors, and the children of Mary. She is often represented with a lamb, the symbol of her virginal innocence, and a palm branch. Her feast day is celebrated on January 21st. Agnes was a very beautiful young girl, and her hand in marriage was highly sought. However, Agnes made a promise to God never to stain her purity. Her love for the Lord was great, and she hated sin more than death. Whenever a man wished to marry Agnes, she would always say, "Jesus Christ is my only spouse." According to legend, the young men she turned away became so angry and insulted by her purity and devotion to God that they began to submit her name to authorities as a Christian follower. Accounts of Agnes's life hold the prefect Sempronius responsible for her martyrdom. It is said he condemned the young girl to be dragged through the street naked. The legend states that Agnes's hair grew instantly to cover her entire body, and all the men who attempted to rape the beautiful virgin were immediately struck blind. Once sentenced to death for refusing to deny God, Agnes was tied to a stake to burn. However, either the wood would not burn, or the flames parted away from her. This prompted an officer to draw his sword and behead the girl. It is believed that her blood, which poured out into the stadium, was soaked up with cloths by Christians. She died at the age of 12 or 13 on January 21st, 304. Her bones are currently conserved beneath the high altar in the church of Sant'Agnes Fuori le Mura in Rome, which was built over the catacomb that held her tomb. Her skull is preserved in the church of Sant'Agnes in Agone in Rome's Piazza Navona. To learn more about St. Agnes, visit Catholic.org. And if St. Agnes inspires you or someone you know, shop for her items by clicking on the CatholicShopping.com link below for a one-of-a-kind shopping experience.
Yeah, for one-of-a-kind shopping experience, you can buy a little pendant with the Agnes' skull on there. It's crazy. You can see this is Roman Catholic gibberish. But that's where the paleums come from. See? That's where this foolishness comes from. So, my brothers and sisters, let me read to you from the Catholic Dictionary by Atwater, published in 1958. 1958. Let's talk about the pallium here. I'm not going to read too much. Don't need to read that much. It says, the pallia are made by the oblates of St. Francis of Rome, of the wool of two lambs blessed in the church of St. Agnes on her feast. When made, they are blessed by the Pope on the feast of St. Peter and St. Paul, and are stored in a casket in the Confessio of St. Peter. Interesting. After they're made, they're put into St. Peter's tomb. So that the palliums that are going to be given to the clergy, to the higher ups in the church, have contact with the dead bones, the supposed dead bones of St. Peter. I mean, this is a religion of death. It's a religion of death. It's a demonic religion. And yet, the members of the Joint College of African American Bishops don all this garbage. My brothers and sisters, I've shown you how Rome is a religion of wolves. It's run by a wolf pack, the Pope being the alpha wolf. Now, here is more on the pallium. Here's more. Listen to this. Here's a news report on the pallium.
Hundreds of people from all over the state gathered here at the Cathedral Basilica of St. Francis of Assisi to watch Archbishop John Wester receive his pallium. Gives archbishops the right to work within the Catholic Church as part of the supreme pastoral power of the Pope.
What does the pallium do? It gives the archbishop the power. It gives the archbishop the power to be part of that elite group that runs the Roman Catholic Church. Let's play that again.
Pallium gives archbishops the right to work within the Catholic Church as part of the supreme pastoral power of the Pope. The right to work within the Catholic Church as part of the supreme pastoral power of the Pope. The pallium gives archbishops the right to work within the Catholic Church as part of the supreme pastoral power of the Pope. Pallium gives archbishops the right to work within the Catholic Church as part of the supreme pastoral power of the Pope.
But what does the supreme power of the Pope do? It says kill lambs. See, they're a contradiction. They're wearing lambskins like the wolves Jesus told us would come. These are false prophets. These are false teachers who do what? Come to you in sheep's clothing. But really, they're what? Ravenous wolves. My dear brothers and sisters, what is St. Agnes the patron saint of? Of rape victims, of innocent children who have been raped. Well, isn't every Roman Catholic diocese in America bankrupt because they've been paying out pedophilia lawsuits? What has the Roman Catholic Church been allowing? Well, they've been allowing the raping of victims, of little children. What is St. Agnes the patron saint of? Mary's little children. Rape victims. She represents innocence. She was 12 years old when she was martyred. Men wanted to do things to her. See, when they say we care for the little lambs, they're not caring for little lambs because the wool of the little lambs that they bear on their shoulders are the lambs that they've killed. That's what they've done. And what is the Roman Catholic Church famous for? They just arrested a very high archbishop. I mean, he is high in the church. He's a close friend and ally of Pope Francis. They just arrested the archbishop in Australia. For what? For being a child molester. For raping little children. Raping! You see, they're wolves in sheep's clothing. And when you start wearing the junk that Rome wears, you become just like Rome. You start acting like Rome. I wouldn't be surprised if we start having serial raping in the African-American church. If you wear that junk that's been lying on dead bones, and it goes back to the feast of St. Agnes. My brothers and sisters, little children are being set up for rapes. And who's shuffling all of these pervert priests around? Who hides these pervert priests? Who gives them transfers? Who puts them out of police reach so that they don't get arrested? Who puts them out of the reach of the authorities? The Roman Catholic Church does. The Pope and the archbishops move these pedophile priests around, they themselves being pedophiles. They hide these people. They hide them. These people don't go to jail. Now they'll pay out the lawsuits, they'll pay out. They'll give the victims money. They'll award them what the courts say they deserve. But these people are damaged for life. Their innocence has been robbed. They've been raped. They've been scarred for life. These hypocrites who claim to carry little sick lambs and little wayward lambs on their shoulders, they don't carry them. They destroy them. They slaughter them. They martyr them. And this is coming to an African-American church near you, because now they're going from New York to Philadelphia to purchase insignia, and one of the insignia is the pallium.
Pallium. The pallium gives archbishops the right to work within the Catholic Church as part of the supreme pastoral power of the Pope. It was placed on him by the Pope's personal rep in the U.S., Apostolic Nuncio Archbishop Carlo Maria Vigano. The pallium was given to him by Pope Francis when he met him back in June, just 3 weeks after Wester was named the 12th Archbishop of Santa Fe. And just after Mass, Wester also presided over the 14th Annual Archbishop's Award Ceremony, where members of the community are recognized for being role models in the Catholic faith through their service to others. Now this year, more than 70 of those awards were given out. In Santa Fe, Lead Ali Khani, KOAT, Action 7 News.
Big deal. They give out awards to dopey parishioners who don't want to admit what's really going on in the Catholic Church. Because the people handing out those awards, those archbishops handing out those awards are the very same archbishops that are molesting the kids. Very same. So a child molester is giving you awards to shut you up, to buy you. Well, saints, that'll do it for today. I'll be back tomorrow with more on the pallium. Yes, there's more. We're not finished with the pallium. There's so much more revelation. There's so much more revelation on the pallium. I will be back tomorrow to deal with more on this woolen cloth that is 2.5 inches wide and has 6 crosses on it. God bless you, saints.
The mighty fortress is our